Dear presence who holds us in grief, this week we have much to grieve for. In just 3 months, in the United States, COVID-19 took 100,000 lives, perhaps more. This is an unfathomable number. These people were beloved, friends, co-workers, parents, siblings, children, grandchildren. They will, each one, be missed by many, many people. As we hold their lives in our hearts and minds, please hold us in our grief. It may be a long time till we can safely gather together on Sunday mornings in our beloved sanctuary. That is something that we have loved and counted on. Hold us in our grief while we process this in our hearts. Another black man was senselessly killed by the police. Hold us in our grief at this injustice. Hold us in our grief as people riot their rage across the United States. Remind us in this time of pain of love. Remind us that love always exists, and out of love comes our grief. Our grief is the other side of love. Out of love comes justice and our willingness to work for justice. And out of love comes a way through. Hold us while we find the way through. Now take time to say out loud the things that are heavy on your heart. Say out loud the names of people who you carry with you today. And now we will take time, as is your tradition, for prayer or meditation or reflection.
Good morning. My name is Kim Transier. I've been a member of WWF for 12 years. I got involved with the UU The Vote team because I had begun to notice that screaming at headlines alone in a room was not as helpful as I had hoped, and I felt ready to do something more. On behalf of WWF, the UU The Vote team is thrilled to welcome Debbie Kay as our speaker this morning. Debbie Kay is president of the League of Women Voters of Portland. She's a native Oregonian. She and her family have attended Elliott Institute for over 25 years. She's been a member of the League of Women Voters of Portland since 1991 and served on its board for 10 years before becoming president last May. Welcome, Debbie.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the warm welcome, and thank you for inviting me to join you today. Speaking to you via recording is a new activity for me. I miss seeing your faces and your reaction, but I'll persevere, as the suffragists did. I've been asked to speak on voting rights, and I've titled it 100 Years from Suffrage to Suppression and Back Again. I'll present some history and current information about suffrage, the League of Women Voters, and about voter suppression. Starting with suffrage history, it's been an issue since people began to vote. Who gets to vote? Well, for centuries, of course, it was men. They had the land and the money. Through the progressive movements of the 19th century, including abolition and temperance, women began to seek the right to vote. Names like Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton might be familiar to you. Likewise, African Americans, Sojourner Truth, Ida B. Wells, and Frederick Douglass. All were working for reforms, including women's suffrage, and many for black suffrage as well. They knew how much it mattered. Locally in Oregon, Abigail Scott Duniway carried the torch to get the vote for the women of Oregon. It took 6 ballots over 28 years, from 1884 to 1912, until finally 52% of the men voted in favor of women having the vote in Oregon. From the historic 1848 Seneca Falls, New York, convention to discuss the social, civil, and religious condition and rights of women, to passage of the 19th Amendment took 72 years. These years were filled with organizing throughout the country. And remember, there was no radio, television, email, or Zoom. Thousands of people and miles, marches and parades, posters and signs, both pro and anti-suffrage, printing and distributing pamphlets, passionate people writing newspaper articles and editorials, subterfuge, lies, winter vigils in front of the White House, hunger strikes in jail. The suffrage colors were those of the flag behind me, purple for loyalty, yellow for hope, and white for purity. The suffragists were skilled strategists. White was universal, adaptable to the seasons, affordable, and stood out well against the sea of men's black suits in the black and white photography of the day. I am dressed today in remembrance of the suffragists who worked so hard and gave so much, even their lives, for the cause. Never believe that your vote does not matter. The vote for or against the 19th Amendment came down to one young man in the Tennessee legislature who changed his vote from nay to yay and secured the final 36th state to ratify the 19th Amendment in August 1920. Now I'd like to tell you a little bit about the League of Women Voters and its history. February 14th, 1920, just a few months ahead of the passage of the 19th Amendment, the League of Women Voters was formed by the suffragists of the National American Woman Suffrage Association. It began as a mighty political experiment whose first mission was to help 20 million women carry out their new responsibilities as voters. The League sought to make a more perfect democracy and to foster education in citizenship and support improved legislation. Remember the reform movements. And this is what we still do. The League is an activist grassroots organization whose leaders believe that citizens should play a critical role in shaping public policy. It is a fiercely nonpartisan organization in 50 states and over 700 communities throughout the U.S. There are 14 in Oregon. Since its founding, the League of Women Voters has been deeply engaged in a lot of reform movements, the United Nations, the ERA, civil rights, the Voting Rights Amendment, and many others. I often describe our Portland League as a three-legged stool. The first is voter service. We provided many, many resources for the recent primary election. Voters' guides online and in print in English and Spanish. With the inability to have candidate debates, we interviewed 66 candidates in 24 races on a video voter's guide, available on YouTube and with our partner Metro East Community Media. Vote411.org is a national resource online for all voting information. These services will be available for upcoming elections too, as well as a Speakers Bureau for the November general election will present balanced, neutral information to help voters understand ballot measures. The second leg is study, action, and advocacy. For example, recently the League researched for 2 years and wrote a study report on city government in Portland. It's called The City That Works, Preparing Portland for the Future. In the next year, when the City Charter Commission meets, the League will advocate using this report and the positions derived through member consensus to influence new policy. We have positions on many issues that allow us to take action, recommending policy at City Council. Some of these are police accountability, housing and homelessness, education, and more. And the third leg is civic education. Every year we offer panel discussions, free and open to the public, on contemporary big issues. We've presented recently on innovations in public education, juvenile justice, the city government study, and also on cybersecurity, a particularly hot topic right now. The League has 100 years of strictly nonpartisan research, providing the resources that our communities need to be informed and active voters and participants in policy decisions. This winter, we celebrated the centennial of the League and of the passage of the 19th Amendment. We honored the people and the accomplishments and also recognized the great work yet to be done. I've given you some background on the suffrage movement and the League of Women Voters. As we move into talking about voter suppression, let's first consider why vote. Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis said, "The most important political office is that of private citizen. One of our rights as citizens, and I believe our obligation, is to vote. Because we get to decide who represents us. We get to choose who will be our voice in government and help make policy decisions for our communities. We demonstrate our community values through tax measures. If you don't vote, you have no voice, and your vote matters." Let's talk a little bit about the law. Citizenship and the ability to vote are intertwined. Without one, the other is impossible to achieve. This fact accounts for some of the challenges in gaining and retaining the franchise. Between 1856, when all white men had the right to vote, and 2013, when the Supreme Court case Shelby v. Holder, gutted parts of the 1965 Voting Rights Amendment, there were 9 federal laws changing the right to citizenship and the right to vote. The 15th Amendment, as we learned through the story earlier today, stated that the right to vote may not be denied because of race. Yet, many states found ways to discourage or prevent black men from voting, as they did to African American women after passage of the 19th Amendment. When Native Americans and Asian people became citizens later in the 20th century, again, some states put up barriers to their ability to register and to vote. However, the Voting Rights Act of 1965 forbids states from imposing discriminatory restrictions on who can vote and provides mechanisms for the federal government to enforce its provisions. But in 2013, some of its fundamental tenets were removed. However, not all of those federal laws were circumvented by states. Some beneficial changes that have remained intact include the 26th Amendment, lowering the voting age to 18. I can imagine that some of you participated in that effort. My husband did. Amendments requiring that ballots be available in languages other than English. Another example is the 1993 National Voter Registration Act. Its nickname is Motor Voter, and in Oregon, this law has been enhanced such that you can practically be registered to vote just by pressing your nose against the windows of the DMV. And in 2002, HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, was in response to the disputed 2000 presidential election. You remember hanging chads. And now voter suppression. A quote from the American Civil Liberties Union. "All of us are affected by voter suppression. Our democracy is debased when the vote is not accessible for all. But the fact is that some groups are disproportionately affected by voter suppression tactics, including people of color, young people, the elderly, and people with disabilities." Some of you have seen the film Suppressed. It is a documentary about voter suppression right now, primarily in Georgia, where it is rampant, unabashed, and well documented. From that film, a quote, "If your vote didn't matter, they wouldn't be trying to stop it." There are many types of voter suppression. One is errors in purging voter rolls, the lists of voters allowed to participate. In 2019, Ohio planned to purge 235,000 names from the voter rolls based on lack of recent voting and assuming that those people were dead or had moved out of state. The Secretary of State submitted lists to some organizations, including the League of Women Voters and the executive director of Ohio's League, who had voted 3 times in the previous year, had her name on that list. She would have been purged had she not checked, And that was the case for 20% of the over 200,000 people on that list. Another kind of voter suppression is gerrymandering. This creates oddly shaped voting districts, separating natural voting blocks and diminishing their power to elect people who truly represent them. Redistricting is the process of redrawing district lines following the decennial census. I do hope you've all filled out your census forms. People move around. Oregon's population has grown considerably since the last census, and we're likely to get a sixth congressional district. State legislatures are usually responsible for redistricting. However, they are inherently political, and they want to retain power. Reform movements throughout the country are working to change this process by establishing independent redistricting commissions. Nationally, the campaign for fair redistricting is called People-Powered Fair Maps. If you want to support an independent redistricting commission for Oregon, visit this website, People Not Politicians Oregon, to sign petitions that you can download for a November ballot measure. And please do it soon. They have to be in by July 2nd. Money in politics is another part of voter suppression. Money often determines who runs for office and therefore who votes. It is subtle, but if people do not see candidates who look like them to represent their interests, they're less likely to vote. Campaign finance reform to promote a broader range of candidates is a major advocacy issue for the League of Women Voters. Additional examples of voter suppression are the reduction of the number of polling places and access to them. Only 40% of polling places fully accommodate people with disabilities. Shortened polling place hours, lack of poll voters, and inadequate numbers of functioning voting machines. Another is onerous voter registration requirements, followed by excessive voter identification requirements at the polling place. Reduced early voting days. And in many states, felons and some former felons may not vote. In Oregon, once released, the privilege of voting is restored. And the really big one right now, because of the coronavirus, absentee voting restrictions. Michelle Obama has been widely quoted saying, "No American should have to choose between making their voice heard and staying safe." Very recently, as some of you may know, Wisconsin voters went to the polls while the state was under a stay-at-home order because their vote mattered to them. An unprecedented 1.2 million people requested absentee ballots in Wisconsin, overwhelming the election officials. There were reports from voters who never received their ballots, prompting an investigation from the Wisconsin Elections Commission and the U.S. Postal Service. However, there are positive efforts and positive outcomes. As of June last year, a total of 21 states and the District of Columbia permit same-day voter registration. This is not the case in Oregon. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, many states are looking at expanding opportunities for absentee voting and vote by mail. Personally, I really, really hope that they like it so much that they'll just keep doing it. But some of these are being contested. Nationally in Connecticut, the governor issued an order allowing all voters to request absentee ballots for the August 11th primary. In Texas, after finding the state's existing election rules violated the Equal Protection Clause, District Judge Fred Byrie granted a preliminary injunction allowing all registered voters to apply to vote by mail during the pandemic. In Nevada, all active registered voters will be mailed an absentee ballot, no having to apply for it. In South Carolina, a federal district court has blocked the state from enforcing a requirement that absentee voters have a witness sign their ballot return envelope. And in California, although Governor Gavin Newsom declared that all Californians would receive a ballot through the mail for the November general election, he and the Secretary of State have been sued by a number of Republican organizations claiming an executive order is an illegal power grab that invites potential fraud. No. Here are some positive examples from Oregon. We were the first with vote by mail beginning in 1999. I was a volunteer signature gatherer with the League of Women Voters. Youth may pre-register to vote at age 16, joining 13 other states with that same privilege. Last year, our legislature approved postage paid return envelopes beginning with this primary. Voter turnout for this recent primary was among the highest in the United States. And regarding vote fraud, according to Tim Scott, the director of the Multnomah County Elections Division, whom I have heard speak more than once, vote by mail has practically zero fraud. I know many of you are working on voter suppression issues, and thank you for your work. Throughout the country, so is the League of Women Voters, in coalition with many other organizations. All of our efforts are central to maintaining a strong democracy. The motto of the League of Women Voters is empowering voters and defending democracy. We do this every single day. If you'd like information about the League of Women Voters of Portland, please go to our website, lwvpdx.org, and for a national perspective, visit lwv.org. Thank you again for inviting me to be with you today.
So are you feeling inspired now about voting? I'm going to talk for a minute about something called UU the Vote. It's a nationwide initiative designed by the Unitarian Universalist Association to stand up for our principles in this year's elections. UU the Vote launched in January, and teams have formed in congregations in many states. Here at WUF, in response to what we've learned about voter suppression, our first action is a wave of postcards that we're sending to voters who may have been purged from the voter rolls to inform them how to check and reactivate their registration. Just in the last couple of weeks, we've given out at least 500 postcards to dozens of woofers. Yesterday, a bunch of us got together on Zoom to work on our postcards, and what a great time that was. It was a magical evening. We laughed, we cried, the roses, the fountains. I am recording this on Friday the 29th, and the party was or will be on Saturday, but I'm sure it will be great because we had a gathering on Zoom a week before to discuss a documentary, which you've got to see. It's called Suppressed, The Fight to Vote. It's on YouTube. See it. And that was great. So it just feels good to know that you're actually not alone screaming at the headlines. We are in community. As you may have heard, our first principle as you use is the inherent worth and dignity of every individual. And our fifth principle is the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. Everyone's voice matters. Everyone should be able to vote. Stay tuned. Your UU the Vote team will be organizing more activities and getting in touch by email. Take care.
Our closing words are from Wayne Arneson. Take courage, friends. The way is often hard. The path is never clear. And the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone.